World Gardening Talk back on 2NUR FM. Greg Richard here, joined by Scott Sharp, back for 2025.
We are in the blocks waiting for the starter's gun for 2025. Here we go.
Well, I don't have a pistol with me, but...
Okay, just one of those little cap guns.
Yeah, just a little... I'll just pop a balloon, maybe that might help. Yeah, that might be some more.
It'll scare me. Get rid of the hiccups anyway.
Exactly right. Scott Sharp, what do you got for us today?
Well, the weather has been fantastic. We've had a bit of rain. We've got the heat. Yep, summer is well and truly going for us. I'm going to talk today about ivory curl trees that are all out in flower at the moment. Some tomato care, just what to do in the humidity, and a fantastic plant that I think everyone's almost forgotten about, the New Guinea impatiens.
New Guinea impatiens?
Yeah, lots of colour.
Right.
Yeah, sun, shade, we'll talk about that.
We've got Victoria from Rayworth. She's got a question about germinating Banksia Anzac seeds. Afternoon, Victoria.
Good morning. Yes, I have a lovely bottle brush in the garden and it's white flowering. And the variety's called Anzac. And I had a father who's a war veteran and a brother who's a veteran. And when I told my brother, he said, oh, germinate some of those and I'll have put a couple in the garden and give them to some of my other army mates. And is it possible to germinate them, the seeds that are on the, you know, it finishes flowering and then it goes, the little pot, the little branches go to seed. Is it possible?
Absolutely possible to do that. And one of the tricks you might want to use is when you see it start, you know, the flower starting to wilt away and it looks like it's going to go to seed. You can get the old paper bag or, you know, some sort of bag that, like one of those laundry bags. That's what I'm thinking of, you know, that it will still allow it to breathe. Definitely wouldn't put it in a plastic bag because it just get too hot and sweaty. No. And you actually just tie one of those bags around the flowers. And as the seeds, they'll just drop off into the bag and then you can get those and put them into a propagating mix and, start them off that way.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Look, the other way you can do it is to take cuttings of the plant and then you'll get a true replica, I guess is the best way to think about it, a true copy of the plant. So you won't get any variation through the seed. Again, you just go and get one of those propagation gels. People also say you can use honey as well. You just take some cuttings from up the top of the plant where it's just starting to turn brown and woody. You can strip off some of the leaves, dip some of that in the honey or the prop gel. And again, just into a propagating mix and water as usual, and you'll get a true copy, a certified copy of the bottle brush. But you can do it by seed as well.
It's lovely. I urge people to go and buy this variety called Anzac. It's a lovely tribute to our men and women of the forces.
Yes, and it is a beautiful coloured flower on there. I just love that white on the Anzac bottle brush. Very nice.
It is. Yes. Thank you very much for your help.
Okay. Thank you, Victoria, and good luck with that.
Thank you.
Bye.
We got John from Merriweather. He's got a question about a pine that he brought from you.
Good afternoon, John. How can we help you?
Right, mate, I'll just give you an update, mate. When you were in Alice Street, I bought a Wallaby pine sapling off you.
Yes.
And I had it in a pot for a little while. I planted it in the backyard. It's now probably the biggest Wallaby pine outside the National Park. It's over 6 metres high. And just let your listeners know they are the most fantastic yard plant because they don't lose any leaves at all.
No, they're really good.
And they get that, they very occasionally, one of the ferny branches dies and falls off.
Now, John, did you say you had that in a pot or did you have it in the ground?
It was in the pot originally, but now I planted it in the corner of the backyard and it's just amazingly grown amazingly quickly and it's over 6 metres tall. And, but they're not messy and they don't spread out much and they're it's just a wonderful tree.
Yeah, look, they really are. And I sort of wondered at the time when they became popular and they were back out for sale how they almost became extinct because in some ways they were very easy to look after and very versatile. I think you needed to have, you know, just the right spot for them in the garden. And that's why I was asking if you had it in the ground or in a pot because if you had it in a pot, you just leave it exactly where it is. You don't go moving them around.
Yeah, well, around Merriweather, as you probably know, probably the ground around there is not all that kind of fertile, for want of a better word.
Yes.
But whatever it is in my backyard, in my old house in Yonah Street, it just thrived there. It's just gone remarkably well. And it's a beautiful tree. I pat it every time I walk past it.
Yeah, look, they really are. And I just love that like you said, that ferny sort of quality that they have to them.
It's still only about 2 metres wide, so it doesn't spread out much.
But yeah.
And every spring, the leaves grow that little pale extension on the leaves.
They do. That's a beautiful colour too, isn't it?
Little white knob on the end of the branches. It's just a fantastic tree. And I'd highly recommend a yard. But if you want a big yard tree, you can hardly go wrong with one of them in your backyard.
Yeah, no. Thank you for that. And yeah, that funny white knob they get on the end, it almost looks like it's...
Looks like it's
got mealybug or, you know, some sort of weird mould on there. But it's not. It's just a part of the plant. And off it goes.
You might know better than me, Scott. I think they found another grove of trees in the national park.
Oh, no, I was reading an... I haven't heard about that. I was reading an article...
It was sometime after the first lot.
Yeah.
But I heard that they found a second grove there, but I don't know. I don't know the details.
Yeah, I was reading an article about probably late last year about it. One popped up, and it was very interesting to read, and just how, you know, that's still a secret because they don't want people traipsing in there.
No.
And it's actually, you can't just traipse in there anyway. Apparently, you almost have to abseil down.
Yeah.
And to get in there. And they just don't want disease getting brought into that area to jeopardise them.
Yeah. Anyway, mate, I'm very glad you sold me that tree.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, thanks for the call, John. Really appreciate it.
No worries, mate.
Okay. Bye bye now.
We've got Mick from Charlestown. Got a question about a carnation. Afternoon.
Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well. How can we help you?
So I've got some carnation. Do you know what that is?
I do know what carnations are. I've had a tuxedo on before and had one in the lapel.
So they keep dying.
Do they? And where have you got them? Have you got them out in the full sun and you're watering them?
In the, yes, I water them every day at the moment because it's summer.
Yes. Now, carnations, because it gets a bit humid here in Newcastle and the Hunter, they can be a bit susceptible to fungal diseases. So it might be worth actually giving it just a general treatment with a fungicide, because that can be a reason for them just sort of dying off for no reason. They sort of look healthy, but then they start to wilt away and off they go. So there's fungicides out there like copper oxychloride. There's also mancozeb. And what you do is just mix those up. You can do them in the watering can if you want to, and just generally water that over the plant, and it will give it a protective coating and, just stop it growing. And I think there might be a reason here in the humidity in Newcastle with carnations.
Okay.
Not a worry. Thanks for the call, Mick.
Bye-bye.
We're Lynn now from Chisholm, and she's got a question about pruning the passion fruit vine.
Good afternoon, Lynn. How can we help you?
Hi, Scott. I just want to know, is it time to prune the passion fruit vine, and how far back do I prune it?
Yes. Now, has your passion fruit stopped fruiting yet, or...?
Yes, it has.
Yeah, okay. Look, it's probably a good time to do it in that case. With a passion fruit vine, you can go fairly heavy. Now, the only trouble with them, though, is that, and like most vines or creepers, is that it's very hard to pick, where that main leader is. So it's best with a passion fruit really just to get your shears out and almost just, skim over the top of it rather than going in and cutting main branches, because you could accidentally, cut sort of the main artery of the plant, and we know what happens then. It's not going to be pretty for the passion fruit. Just a sort of a general shaving over the top of the plant is probably the best way to do it. If it is spreading, one way too far in particular, then you could get in a little bit heavier and give it a prune then. But now is the time to do it. You'll get some new growth on before we get to the winter months. Then it'll be hardened up and it will protect the plant through the colder months of July and August.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, not a problem.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, we've got Kerry now from Cessnock. Got a question about the orchid or orchard.
orchid, orchid. Hello, Kerry. We'll help you out with either one.
It's an orchid.
Okay, very good. How can we help you?
My hubby bought me an orchid, and I think I might have overwatered it because the leaves fell off it, and I've taken it out of the pot and cleaned off all the dead root.
Yeah.
And the stem where the leaves were is a bit slushy. Do I trim that off, or because I went today and I got some of the moss potting mix.
Yes, yes.
And I was also told that mix up aloe vera, honey, and vitamin B, and water it with that.
Okay, look, it all really depends on just how mushy the stem is on the plant. you know, if it's sort of black and it's just rotting away, unfortunately, I mean, your hubby's done a beautiful thing by buying you that plant. He might need to go out and buy you another one if it's really, really mushy and horrid. I think you're probably talking about a Phalaenopsis orchid because they just don't like having wet feet. They like to be really, really well drained. Yeah.
Well, I'd never had one before, and I didn't realise that you don't water it as often. So I've been online, you know, looking up things and about orchids and how to look after them. So without him knowing, I bought another one today.
Well, I hope he's not listening because your deception is about to be uncovered. So do I. So you're just going to sneak it in there like the old goldfish and pretend it's the same one again.
Yeah.
I love your work, Kerry. I've got to pay that. You've done very, very well there. I think it's probably the best way to go. Look, Phalaenopsis are typically very, very tough. I had one for about 8 or 9 years. But again, they like to almost be in a bark mix. They really just grow on the branches of other plants in the rainforest. So,
It's got the moss in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just be very careful about how you're watering it. You know, maybe once, twice a week. Certainly when it gets to the cooler months, you start to cut back on your watering then.
Yep. Okay then.
Okay. Well, look, we're not going to tell your husband. We'll keep it a secret.
Secret safe with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Who would we tell?
Come to think of it, I think he does.
Oh dear. Thanks for the call, Kerry. You have lightened up our afternoon for us.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Now, you mentioned something a bit earlier, Scott, about impatience.
Yes, the New Guinea impatience. One of those plants that I think just got a little bit forgotten about over time because they are a really, really beautiful plant. So many different colours with them and bright colours like pinks, you know, whites, magentas, very, very vibrant. You can get variegated leaves on them as well. And you can use them to plant out whole areas. Now, they'll grow in the shade and they'll actually grow out in the full sun as well, surprisingly.
Oh, not so. It's very versatile.
Very versatile. You'd think a plant like that, it's a really vascular, fleshy plant. You think there's no way this is going to survive, you know, the heat, 42, 43 degree heat hammering down on it.
Yep.
It might droop and feel a little bit sad at that point in time, but you give them a water and because they are so fleshy and vascular, they just suck it straight back up and they look fantastic again. So they can be wilting, but a quick water will fix them up. Like I said, you can grow, you know, they grow, I guess. Oh, here's some of the old hands again. They've come out for the first time this year.
I'd say a good sized dinner plate.
A good sized dinner plate across. You're not going to actually put a centimetre on that?
No.
Imperial?
Maybe 30 centimetres.
Okay. Across, so, and probably about that high.
Probably a good jug size.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe a stein.
Stein height. So we've got a dinner plate and a stein height of a plant with lots and lots of colour. And like I said, you can just plant them out, mass plant them. You can do, you know, creative patterns, I guess, with the colouring of them as well. Very versatile. You get to your local garden centre, check them out. It is the time of the year to get them in now. They will last all the way through winter. So they're, I guess, what you call a semi-perennial. Eventually, you probably want to, you know, after 2 or 3 years, get rid of them. You can heavily prune them as well. Eventually, they just get a bit stumpy and you just, yeah, it's time to, you know, refresh and replant. But a fantastic plant. Get down to your local garden centre and New Guinea impatiens.
Grab them. And all the different colours, you can, as you said, do a design to something. Or...
Yep, and just in a pot as well, because anything that's about a dinner plate and stein height plant is going to look fantastic in a pot. And, of course, you can move that around to keep it out of the full sun if you need to, just to keep the plant nice and fresh.
Right, yeah, it's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. So we've got Helen from Wall's End, and she's got a question about the baby bougainvillea.
Oh, the baby.
Oh, you know, the little ones.
Yeah, the baby ones. We love the baby cute ones.
Yeah. Look, it's growing lovely. I've had it in a pot for well over 12 months, and it's flowering, not flowering, it's growing really, really good. But it had one little single coloured brack on it a few weeks ago, then that fell off. I'm not getting any colour in it. At all.
Okay. Look, I think it might be time in that case to give it a potassium-rich fertiliser to try and promote the flowering with it. So it used to be, you know, like the old Thrive. But you can go along to your local garden centre and say, look, I just need to promote flowering in a plant. It used to, you can get sulphate of potash, actually, just in its raw form, and water that over the plant and into the soil of the plant, and that will definitely promote flowering. But look, any one of those liquid fertilisers is going to do the job for you. Just go to your local garden centre, say, I need to get my plant, my bougainvillea flowering, and they'll help you out with that.
Yeah, the only thing that I thought might be negative, Scott, is the fact that I've got a wood bark around the base of it. Would that be have anything to do with it not flowering?
Look, I don't think that's going to be affecting it, you know, especially so quickly. Have you got it in the full sun or is it in a shady spot?
No, it's in full sun.
Yeah, so you do need it in there to get the bougainvillea to flower, but otherwise a tough as nails little plant. Make sure you give it a really good old prune, you know, every year just to keep it a nice compact size, because even though they say they're a baby bougainvillea, they'll still get, you know, 1 to 2 metres tall.
As I said, it's growing really fine. I'm really happy with it, but I just, the guy across the road's got one growing around the fence and it's just covered in bracts and...
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and look, the reason for that is because its root system's down in the ground. It's, you know, got all that fuel that it can use to promote the flowering, where you've got yours in a pot and it's just, you know, it's not starved, I'm sure, because you're looking after it beautifully, but just that additional feeding is what it really needs.
Okay, will do. Thank you, Scott.
Okay, thanks. You for the call, Helen. Very much appreciate it.
Bye.
We've got Phil now from the Central Coast. And he's got a question about lily pilly. He's got some spots on it.
Oh, Phil, what's happening with your lily pilly?
Yeah, I've got about 40 metres of lily pillies. They're good. They're about, I don't know, 3 metres high. But I've noticed over the weekend, they've got all these little, on the branches, all these little white spots, and it's soft when
yes.
you squash it.
Okay.
I don't know what it is or what, the best thing to treat it with.
It sounds like on the face value there in your description that you've got some scale on that plant, because that's what scale insects look like, and they're quite squishy. Now, if you were to be really, really clever and careful, you could get, you know, like a razor blade or something and almost just pop one of those little white things off. And if you turned it over, you'd see an actual little insect in there, like a little alien sort of thing. And what it does is it creates that white waxy shell over the top of it to protect itself. Now, that creates a problem, though, when you want to get rid of it, because to get through that white waxy shell, you need some sort of oily sort of substance. So you need to go along to your local garden centre and grab some white oil and mix that up. They might even be able to suggest or sell a product that's got a mixture of, you know, like pyrethrum or some sort of insecticide and the white oil, so it works in a two-pronged way. It gets through and then it kills a little insect in underneath. But you do need to give those lily pillies a really, really good spray all over, so that it's running, you know, down the trunks, and then, you know, wait a week or so and probably go and give it another spray after that. So look, because the scale insects, they just get carried around by the wind. You know, it's just going to infest the whole line of lily pillies for you. So you really do need to treat it, because it'll just make the plants weaker and weaker. Then the scale insect will be able to attack more readily. So you're very important you get it under control.
Yeah, one of the plants is just like starting to lose its leaves.
Yep, and that's because that scale insect is there. And if it gets too many on there, it's actually sucking the sap out of the plant, essentially, is the best way to think about it. You know, the lifeblood of the plant, so it's weakening it, and you're going to get that leaf drop there. So, look, make sure they're all very well watered. Don't use any fertiliser on. You don't want to stress the plants at the moment, but you do need to jump to your local garden centre and get some sort of treatment.
Yep, rightio then. No worries. Thanks for that.
Okay, and thank you for the call, Phil.
Thanks, bye.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM 103.7. We've got time for a couple more calls, and we've got Robin from Williamtown. She's got a question about the hydrangea.
Hello, Robin. How can we help you?
We've got a hydrangea that normally grows to about, I guess, 4 foot high.
Mm-hmm.
After all the rain and heat, it's now 6 foot and needs a good hard cut back because it's encroaching on the rest of the garden.
Yes.
whereabouts do I cut it back?
Yes, so you can give it a hard cutback if you want to now, but you are probably best, to give them a cutback once they've lost their leaves in the middle of winter, but you might as well go for it now. Not so important if you're going to cut it at this time of year, but you always want to go back to the double bud on the hydrangea. So if you sort of have a bit of a root around in there and down through the plant, you'll see the stems and you'll see, and this is usually more evident in winter, that there is, sometimes you'll get a single bud coming out of a stem and then other times you'll get a double bud. So it's more important that you cut down to the double bud and just on top of that, because that's where you'll get the flowering material come from and not necessarily on a single bud. So if you want to at the moment, you can just go and use the shears and just give it a bit of a cut back and then tidy it up and then wait until it's lost its leaves in winter to give it the double bud pruning. Let's call it that, the double bud pruning.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for that, for Scott. I had been told, but I'm just a little bit confused.
Yeah. Look, they're a pretty tough and versatile plant, and the fact that they're going to lose their leaves anyway, if you start to get some fungal disease on there, treat it, to try and keep it under control. But they are deciduous. They are going to lose their leaves in winter here in Newcastle and the Hunter. So you can then just give it the more careful pruning, I guess, back to the double bud, and you'll get beautiful flowers from there.
Lovely. Thank you, Scott.
Okay, good luck with it, Robin.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
Cheers. Thanks, Robin. Scott Sharp, before we mosey on for the first gardening talk back of the year.
Yes.
Ivory curl tree.
Yes, I desperately want to talk about them.
Desperately,
because the trouble is, if I don't talk about them now, then the time has passed.
Oh, okay. Yeah, lucky I picked that one.
You did. I'm glad you did. because they are out in flower at the moment. When you're driving around, you are going to see this magnificent tree. It's a medium-sized tree, probably about 4 to 6 metres here in Newcastle and the Hunter, with a yellow, white, I guess an ivory-coloured flower on it. And it's an elongated flower, like a little sort of a conical shape, almost like a tusk of an elephant, but has that ivory colour.
A baby elephant,
a very baby, who's just started growing its tusks. And they are just absolutely stunning. They're a great street tree. They are actually a native from up north, but they will grow very, very well down here. I guess you could almost grow them all the way down to Melbourne, but they'd probably be a bit stunted down there.
Right, so there's a bit more humidity they're after? Or?
That's exactly what they're after, because they're a rainforest tree. They're top of Buckinghamia for people who like to know that sort of stuff out there. But really easy to look after. A native, so don't go and over-fertilise it, especially with cow manure or anything like that. Always use a native-specific fertiliser, but they will definitely be there in your local garden centres at the moment. A lovely native, like I said, covered in flowers. You just can't imagine how many flowers are on these plants at the moment. The bees will be loving them.
Very good.
Yes, some ivory curl honey is what you'd get if you had some.
And if you could bring in the bees, it helps out the rest of your garden as well.
It certainly does. They're great pollinators. That's what they're there for, and to make us honey.
We've got about a minute left.
Yes.
Now, we're glad we got that out of the way.
Okay, we had to clear the decks of that one, didn't we?
Summer is also tomato time.
It certainly is tomato time.
So what are we doing with our tomatoes? Obviously look after them, but...
Yes, we're going to be very careful about them at this time of year, making sure they're being watered really, really well. There's this thing, though, in the humidity that we get called fusarium wilt, which is a...
Fusarium,
F-U-S, which is a fungal disease they get. Tragically, though, if you start to get that wilting and yellowing on the plant, you just have to pull it out and start again. Oh.
Yeah. So there's no way you could fight it? Or?
It's pretty much untreatable fusarium wilt. Oh. You can get nematodes as well on tomatoes. That can make them wilt also. Molasses apparently is a way to get rid of the nematodes. Otherwise, you have to pull them out and let it lie fallow for a year. Look, I guess in the next few weeks or so, coming into February, March, time to pull out any tomatoes and sort of start again with your new crop to get you all the way through to May.
Scott Sharp, thank you very much, and be back next week?
I'll give it a try, or Jude will be here.
Right, well, I won't be here next week, so.
Well, it's a fresh gardening talk back.
Till next time, a fresh gardening talk back on 2NURFM.